mind. One mind, one controller. The first introductory quote at the beginning of Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, is a quotation of the words of Jesus recorded by John in the Gospel of John, and it states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." The focus in this recording is going to be exploring how to clarify thought regarding draining the swamp. That's really what all of Christian Science is about. Because the swamp is where everything unlike God dwells. So it doesn't matter what appears as a suggestion of something unlike God, it can be classified as the swamp. Everything outside the swamp is pure and perfect, because the only substance is spirit, and spirit is defined as flawless. In fact, it's so flawless that it is totally transparent. In other words, it is completely flawless, and therefore it is completely transparent. Therefore, it is completely reflective. There is no alloy, for it is not mixed with anything less than itself, which means that it only is involved with unique characteristics and is referred to as unique manifestations or individualizations. Every symbol that appears as a human being is really a unique child of God with unique characteristics, with a niche that is just for them. No one can interfere with it. No one can take it away. No one can displace them out of their niche. We all have a niche, which is a specific purpose for us to be, and that is with a capital B, to be. It's like what is. Our isness is to be our uniqueness, and our uniqueness can only reflect the only source there is, consisting of the only substance there is, and the only source, of course, is mind, divine mind, infinite, incorporeal, supreme mind. That's the only mind that exists. In fact, that's the only spirit that exists. In fact, that is the only thing that exists at all. For that, those four adjectives apply to soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Incorporeal, no body. It is all mental. Divine, it's absolutely perfect. Supreme, there's nothing higher. It is the apex. And we're talking about the apex of infinity. And the perfection of infinity. And the mental, which means not corporeal, but incorporeal, that is without limit. And we're talking about finity, infinite, which is without limit. So everything about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love share those same qualities. It's like any number in mathematics. That same number, no matter what it is, can be shared by everyone because it is not a physical thing. It is a mental concept. It's an idea. So there's no limit to its ability to be utilized or reflected by anyone and everyone for any purpose whatsoever. And that's the way with mind. Mind is the only controller, because it's the only source of action. Mind is omniscient, so it's the only source of intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. It's the only source of creativity. It's the only source of capacity, capability, functionality, facility. And when you combine those things with the fact that spirit is flawless, then you're going to have a performance, because remember, it's the only action. So the performance is going to have those same four adjective qualities of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. We all have one Father, Mother God. By all, I mean everything that exists. All existence has one Father, Mother, God. And our Father, Mother, God is connected to its manifestation directly and continuously. Every single one of us have the same source. And since we have the same source, we have the same lineage, the same heritage, and there's no flaw. Because an omni-intelligent, omni-wise, and omni-knowing God, which of course is omnipotent because of all the other things mentioned, and it's omnipresent, or it couldn't be infinite, so we have the omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction of God, which is our model. We don't have to do anything. We just have to get any kind of sense of little tiny ego that we might have out of the way. And if we do that, we will be free from anything that's opposed to truth. So if we desire to understand truth so that we will be free from anything that is unlike truth, we only have to get anything that is in conflict with the purity of spirit, which is everything that's in the swamp, anything unlike the purity of spirit is the swamp. All we have to do is pull the plug on the swamp. And look up and see the light of mind . And what do you think happens to the swamp? It is dried up. And because the sun is shining brightly and warmly, the vegetation will come forth in unimaginable abundance. When she was repeating Isaiah chapter 11, And it talks about the wild animals all being harmonized, all dwelling together. You name it. Doesn't matter whether you're talking about a lamb, a goat, a gazelle, a lion, tiger, alligator, crocodile. It doesn't matter. They all will be harmonious. Many people have seen a family that had both one or more cats and dogs that lived in harmony together. The dog would protect the cat if it was attacked by someone from outside the domain or something. It doesn't matter what the compounded lie upon lie has tried to embed in the thought of humanity. The truth is that we all have one Father, Mother, God. And our real heritage is spiritual. And there's no conflict in spirit because it's flawless. The only thing that can be flawless is something that is of the substance of spirit. So the relationship is flawless between all of God's ideas. There couldn't be any wisdom or intelligence involved with conflict. Conflict is an absence of those. It is ignorance. It is ignorance of the fact that we are all one. There is nothing else. The so-called suggestion of threat on the newly elected president of the United States is a facade. It's like Kurt Russell said when they asked him how he compared his acting to his real life. He flat out said, well, acting is all fantasy land. That's what the swamp is. That's what conflict is. It's all belief. It's the reverse of the actor that was so lame he could hardly walk to the playhouse, but when his cue was called, he totally jumped up on the stage and did his part as if he was a young man. Now, when I say we want to reverse it, because the reality is that the way he was on the stage is reality. And the way he was in hobbling to the theater, that is the fantasy land. It's the lie upon lie that's been compounded based on a mortal belief in the beginning that we are fallible because Adam and Eve are all based on a material basis. Genesis 1 states the reverse. It states God made man in his image and likeness, and everything that God made is good. Good is defined in the Glossary of Science and Health on page 587 to be God, spirit. See, there's the flawlessness, spirit. So good is flawless. And then it gives the seven. mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So that's what good is. Good is perfect wholeness, completeness. It doesn't matter what the belief is. It doesn't matter how long the belief seems to have persisted. It doesn't matter what the supposed source is of the belief. There's really only one real source, if there can be a possibility of a real source being of a belief. It's not really a real source. It is what is suggested as being the source. And that is the belief of Adam and Eve. They supposedly are the cause of all problems for all of humanity. Jesus didn't have any problem. He refuted it. Anyone that has healed anything through Christian Science has proven truth to be real, and its opposite to be fantasy land, to be a swamp that could have the plug pulled out of the bottom to let it dry up so that the real beautiful vegetation comes forth. So that all the wild animals are not wild at all. They're seen to be a harmonious group of God's ideas. Mr. Rawson, one of the greatest geniuses of Christian Science, stated that our purpose is to make other people happy. That's very easy once we realize that we are all of the same Father, Mother, God. When we do that, we'll realize that any little ego that tries to get in our way, we're going to not accept it as being true, but it's only a fantasy land suggestion. And we're not going to meddle in someone else's business because everyone has their own salvation to work out. Dr. Francis Fluno traveled around the U.S. giving a lecture on a topic in which he wrote an excellent 1.5-page paper on, entitled Criticism. Are we going to criticize God's creation? If we do not criticize God's creation, we can't criticize anything in it. And all of us are in it. So we can't criticize someone else unless we're going to criticize God. Are we going to tell him that he made a big mistake? Well, I'll go after you go. You go and talk to him and convince him, and then I'll go. I think I'm going to have a long wait waiting on you to to convince God that he made a mistake, that he made a blunder, that he mixed up fantasy land with reality. Yep. You convince the all-intelligent, all-wise, all-knowing mind that it's wrong. The second quote at the beginning of the textbook, Science and Health, is from Shakespeare. Mary Baker Eddy quotes many times from Shakespeare. This quote says, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." We're either going to have to tell Shakespeare he's wrong, or we're going to have to tell God he's wrong. And Mary Baker Eddy defines or describes Shakespeare as being immortal. In other words, his wisdom is timeless. So you're going to have to convince Mary Baker Eddy he's wrong. She was a very well-educated woman, even though she had only very short time in school. She was deemed to have a vocabulary that was second only to Noah Webster. And he was the first one that ever had a dictionary on the American English language. And of course, that's where Mary Baker Eddy was when she discovered Christian Science. So the American English language is the only true language in which one can understand Christian Science. Because every language is unique. And the American English is the one that Christian Science is based on, all of her writings. So that's the one we have to really improve our understanding of on a ongoing continuous basis, if we want to have an ongoing continuous improvement in our spiritual understanding of God and man. Because the man is the image of God. So we have to understand the source, which is God. Anytime there's even a slightest suggestion that there's a conflict between anyone or anything with the President of the United States, remember, we don't think about persons, personalities, or anything that's limited. We're thinking only about the one that is serving as a leader of one of God's or more, one or more of God's qualities. In this case, the leader of America represents the leader of following a very solid constitution. Freedom of speech. Freedom of religion. The right to bear arms. Which really means the right to protect our thought. Same with free speech. Think of everything in spiritual terms. Our thought, speech, and action should always be based on the only real substance, which is spirit. So free speech is expressing the truth about God and man. The right to bear arms is protecting that thought and not letting anything erroneous enter into our consciousness. From a spiritual viewpoint, the founding of America has a spiritual explanation about every one of its elements. If we contemplate the hymn 264, which is about onward Christian soldiers, we're marching for one purpose. That is to take our stand and stick to good and not accept anything less. We never want to accept anything less if we understand what the more is. The more is the truth. The less is its opposite. In fact, it's really plus and minus. Anything plus is of a spiritual nature. Anything that's minus is its opposite. And we can't mix it. If we mix it, we end up at zero. We have to be absolutely firm to be a definite plus. There are no such things as lukewarm ideas of God. Everything from God is hot. It's hot. It's hot, fearless, courageous, bold, pure, humble. God is not humble. God knows exactly what He is. God's image and likeness needs to be humble to reflect. We're not the subject. We're the reflection. God is the subject. Jesus washed the feet of His disciples. Mary Magdalene washed the feet of Jesus. We need to dig down to the lowest element of evil and throw in the bleach. We've got to get every little parcel of dirt out of our consciousness so that we can fill it full of flawless spirit. We want to make a presence and not ignore anything that tries to interfere with the government of God. Any swamp has to be drained. Mary Baker Eddy says we should settle our accounts every day. I think the easiest way to do it is to settle it as it occurs. Don't let it happen. A very excellent practitioner that I knew for several decades said that when someone called her for help, she would let them tell their woes because it's like they needed to get it off their chest. And when they were done and she hung up the phone, then she would spend whatever time was needed to erase everything they said. If you really wanted to help her, you had a very short conversation on describing your problem. I mean, it should be like Jesus. Jesus would say, yay, yay, nay, nay. In fact, before you called, you should make a checklist and say to yourself, do I need to say that? Do I need to say this? Do I need to say this other thing? And you can probably reduce it down to a few words. There was a movie, and the title was "There a River Runs Through It." And there was a father that had, he had several children, I believe, but the focus was on the star of the show. And apparently, the only teaching that anyone could get, because they were out in the forest, in a remote area living, apparently. So the father was the teacher. And he really knew what he was doing, fortunately for the kids. So he would teach them something and then tell them to go write an essay on it. And the star of the show, which is the one they were focusing on, of course, when he would give them the paper and the father would read it, he'd give it back to him and he'd say, cut it in half. So he would go and work on it. And the second review, the father would say the same thing. Cut it in half. And this would go on about three or four levels. After cutting it in half each time, he'd have to cut it in half again. Until he really got down to a few words to say the same thing that he said when he had the whole enchilada there. Jesus said, yay, yay, nay, nay. If we're going to discuss evil, that's what we better do. Frederick L. Rawson, the one I mentioned as being one of the greatest practitioners of all time, he says about four or five words to refute evil. Whatever the name is, he says, there is no, and then call off the name. That would be it. The rest of the time would be devoted to being in heaven, thinking about God, thinking about heaven, until the mind was totally inundated with everything that was the opposite of what the problem appeared to be. It would be a few seconds to flat out say there is no, and then whatever the problem was. And then the whole rest of the time was devoted to the truth. There's a story about Einstein being questioned about how he would allocate his time if he was given 1 hour to solve a problem, and then it was, you know, if he had the correct solution, it was going to have a major, wonderful impact on humanity forever. And if it failed, humanity would be in deep trouble for a long time. So he said, if I only had 1 hour to do it, I'd devote about 90% of it, or 54 minutes, to determining the right question that needed to be asked in order to answer the problem, to solve the problem. He was of the opinion that there would be basically one overpowering, dominating factor that would be the cause of the problem. And that's what he would devote his time doing, is exploring what it was. Normally, you know, it's not obvious. And then he'd spend the other 10% of the time, or 6 minutes out of the 60, in solving the problem. We need to do it the opposite way. We need to spend almost no time on making our declaration that evil is unreal, and the rest of the time to explore all the reasons why. Mary Baker Eddy says that we need to determine the real cause of the problem and then explain it away with the truth. That gets back to the first citation in the textbook. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Know means understand. So we need to explain it away with the truth from every angle. There are several students that only devoted 15 minutes to each one of their appointments. So if they were 10 hours in the office, they'd have like 40 people, or 12 hours, you know, 48 people, 18 hours. You know, 72 people. Every 15 minutes, they'd go to the next one. Joel Goldsmith walked into the Benevolent Association, which is a place that was like a nursing home for Christian Scientists. And he was called there by one of the patients. And when he got to the front door, the receptionist said, "I don't know that you ought to go in there because everyone has this problem and it's contagious." The whole thing was full of patients and they all had this same problem. Apparently he laughed at the receptionist. He said, "You got to be kidding." He said, "Don't you see it's only one problem?" I don't know, maybe they had 100 patients or whatever. He said, "There's not 100 problems here. There's one problem." In moments, he solved the one problem and everyone was instantly healed. It was like somebody turned on the light switch. They were all healed. Just like that. Frederick L. Rawson, who I mentioned was one of the most brilliant practitioners of all, he discovered how to go back in time and heal. It's like that movie, Back to the Future. Yeah, he discovered how to go back in time and heal. It's all explained on our website. He said they used to teach in school, and this was, you know, over 100 years ago. This is when he was a practitioner. He went on to his next venture around 1925. So right at 100 years ago is when he passed into being around the corner where we couldn't see him anymore, or those that were here. Yeah, he said they used to teach it in school, that there was no time. It was only a mathematical concept. Well, that's what speed is. Speed is, you know, movement related to time. That's what the calendar is. The concept of time. Someone I know was working on a project and he chose to isolate himself away from all civilization. And it was for 20 years. He worked on this. 20 years. And when he was finished, everyone that knew him couldn't believe it because he looked the same way he did 20 years before. He had not aged at all. And to this day, he looks 20 years younger than everyone else his age looks. Mary Baker Eddy tells about a lady that was in the sane asylum because she lost her lover. I don't know, he went away or maybe he passed on or whatever. I don't recall what the details were, but she sat at a window expecting him to return. And she was in that insane asylum apparently 40 or 50 years. Because this was relating it when she was, I think, in her 70s. And people that did not know her case, they would guess her age to be like 20 years old. And she was like 70 years old. Her thought controlled her appearance. And she was still thinking she was a young woman that was waiting on her lover to come back. Do we want to learn how to heal at a time prior to today? If we have a problem today and we've had a problem for, who knows, maybe 10 years or 20 years, would we like to have the healing take place when it was first discovered to be a problem? And that all of the aggravation that one experienced from that time until today would absolutely disappear from the memory of everyone that observed the problem? That's what happens when you go back in time and heal the problem. Einstein said about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science in the textbook, Science and Health, he says, "Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book." Here's a man that studied to try to figure out what made the world tick. He also said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. That's 80. He devoted his adult life to trying to discover the things that she had already discovered 80 years before. In essence, he wasted his whole life. If he would have just studied Christian Science, he'd probably be walking on water. There's only one true science, and that is Christian Science. That's the only really true science. Because everything that is true is based on God. In fact, Frederick Rawson had such a good understanding of that, that he and another Christian Scientist by the name of Spalding were gazing out a window one time. Doesn't say what they were discussing, but I presume it was Christian Science. And while they were doing that, there was, and this was back like 1910, so like 115 years ago, so there weren't much in the way of motorized vehicles. And there was a man that had a cart, a wooden cart, that was filled with rocks, and he had some kind of an animal that was pulling it, and he had an uneasy feeling about the back end of it, like maybe there was, the tailgate wasn't fastened in there correctly or something. So he stopped the animal and went back to examine it, and while he was standing behind the cart, there was some kind of a disturbance that bothered the animal, and it raised up and dumped a whole load of rocks on this man. And he was totally immersed, covered up with the rocks. And Mr. Rawson made a statement of these words: "There is nothing but God." That was all he said. After saying those words, the man jumped up out of that pile of rocks like a rocket. Not a scratch on him. No evidence that the accident had ever happened. Well, he apparently didn't have a very good attitude about it. Very upset with the animal, blaming it on the animal instead of being grateful. He had a whip there and he started whipping the animal. Frederick L. Rawson took his, he had a pencil and he tapped it on the window. And with all the commotion and the noise that was going on outside, that animal walked right over to the window. And that broke the mesmerism of the driver, and everything was peaceful. Imagine just tapping a lead pencil on the window. Broke the mesmerism. He had it so clear in his thought. This is Mr. Rawson. That totally reversed the attitude of the man. And everything was peaceful. Mr. Rawson also wrote a book that is called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And it includes a chapter of around 200 pages, which lists 1,315 different ailments. And in each one, he states how you should deny it. There is no, and then the name of the ailment. And then the rest of the paragraph on it tells the truth that you should be reciting, or this is just a suggestion, you know, you can create the treatment any way you desire to be refuting and acknowledge, well, the refuting should be very quick, but to acknowledge the truth about the situation, which reverses the error. And the whole thing is like one paragraph on each one of 1,300 of them. He's one of them that had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith, the one that healed everybody that was in the nursing home at one time, he had 15-minute appointments. Wentworth Winslow had 15-minute appointments. He healed one boy that had passed on. So there's three of them that we know of are documented as having 15-minute appointments. Clara Barton was the founder of American Red Cross. And you may be interested in reading what she had to say about Christian Science and Mary Baker Eddy. The truth right now gets the same response that it did when Jesus was here. Jesus had 12 disciples. And he had one that was loyal. That was John. None of the others showed up at his cross, at the crucifixion. They were afraid they would be arrested. John didn't have any fear. He overcame being put into a pot of boiling oil. They couldn't kill him. So they sent him to the island of Patmos. And Jesus appeared on the island of Patmos after he had ascended. He came back and dictated the book of Revelation. That's why we have Revelation. A new heaven and a new earth described. On page 146, Mary Baker Eddy makes one of the most significant statements in the entire textbook. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle. Upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And here's a second one that corresponds to that on page 330. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And she tells you what those 32 planks are on the following 10 or 11 pages. They're numbered paragraphs, numbered topics. So she tells you that Christian Science has been reduced to a system. And she tells you what you need to understand in order to make it work. And we have many, many treatments, recordings, that give you very specific details about it. In the menu, there is a listing that says prayer treatments. And there's over 200 treatments right there. And at the top of every page, under our present design, there are four buttons that say the following, and when you press them, it will take you to that particular section of the website. One is how Christian Science heals. A second one, divine metaphysics. A third one, system platform. That's those 32 planks. And the divine metaphysics is the first thing I read about the divine metaphysics being reduced to a system. And the fourth one is heal everything. So it gives you specific instructions on how to study in a way that you will be totally successful in your effort, no matter what the problem is. But I will give you an alert right now that Jesus grew up in Galilee, and when he started his ministry, he went to Galilee, and the healing was not very successful. You know why? They had no faith. They thought of him as either a boy, because that's where he grew up when he was a boy, or as a carpenter, which is the trade that he was involved in during his adult life up until he was age 30 when he started his ministry. Often, Jesus would ask people along the wayside if they had faith that they could be healed. Because he left Galilee and went to other places, and of course he was very successful in healing basically everything that he was confronted with. But they had to have an open thought. They had to open the door of their consciousness to let the truth in. And we teach you how to do that. And if you want to have faith, all you have to do is read the last 101 pages of the textbook. It's 700 pages long, so if you read page 600 to 700, that's 101 pages. Those are 485 testimonies by 85 people. So each one had five or six things that they were healed of. And the healing came solely as a result of inquiring and having a curious approach to what is this all about. And they studied the textbook thoroughly. They may have read it several times. And I don't mean just read it. I'm talking about tearing it apart, making it their own. We give you a recommended procedure. It has been found to be very effective. And you can modify it, make it your own. It's very complete in the recommendations on a procedure that will be very useful and effective. The website has a daily topic, which is a complete presentation. Weekends are excluded. And a daily thought, which is a short thought, maybe a paragraph long, that is offered as a suggestion of what you might want to focus on for that day and maybe record it or have it written down and keep it with you in a written text format. And whenever you have a minute, because it's only like one paragraph, when you have like a minute, you can just read it, contemplate it. We give you all the tools. We know that this is effective. Mary Baker Eddy started a movement in 1866, and there have been millions and millions of people that have been healed. Christian Science was the fastest growing movement in the whole world while she was here, from 1866 until 1910. And then it kept on growing even after she left, and it peaked out about 1950, and it's had a radical decline since then. Why? She did not want a church. She had a small one, and they used to rent a building to use. And she saw the problems by having an institution. And so she closed it down. And after a few years, all of the people that were studying Christian Science convinced her to build a church. So she built a lovely church in Boston. And after about, I think it was 4 or 5 years, yeah, I think it held maybe less than 1,000 people. In fact, I think it was a few hundred, probably 300 or 400. And after a short time, they felt they had a need for a big one, so they built one that would hold 5,000 people right next door to it. 5,000 has like 2 levels of balconies. She didn't even look at it for several years until she moved to Boston to start the Christian Science Monitor. And she never attended any of the services at any of the churches, you know, either one of the churches. And she sent a message to be read at the annual meeting. And she provided that instead of having a preacher or a pastor, that there would be a lesson sermon that would be prepared by her publishing house, publishing society. Ended up being a big building. They put out a lot of things. And they prepared a Bible lesson. And she gave them 26 titles. And they were to be repeated. They were to be repeated once a year. So they went through the series from January to June, and then July to December. They went through the same titles again, but of course all the lessons were unique. And the Bible lessons were based on references from the Bible, King James Version, and Science and Health. And that's what they were required to use for the Sunday services. And then on Wednesday, each first reader was to make up their own lesson from the same books, the Bible and Science and Health. So she did everything possible to make the leaders in the church be impersonal. But what happened? As happens with any organization with humans in it, they get greedy. And they want to control other people. And not only that, they totally separated Mary Baker Eddy from her discovery. They took her picture out of the textbook the day after she passed on, republished the book without her picture. They destroyed all the monuments that had been made in her memory. She had statues all over the New England states where she was. And they blew up a pyramid that was made out of the largest piece of New Hampshire granite that had ever been mined, that was designed just like the Great Pyramid in Gaza. They blew it up and they buried the pieces in multiple locations so that it could never be put back together again. Everything was done in total secrecy. So they did everything possible to separate her from her discovery. And the final nail in the coffin was that they've separated the healing from Christian Science. So that there's very little healing now. So all of these steps, and they controlled every branch church. There were churches in like every country on the globe. And they had total control on them. and she set up an instruction manual where they were to have no control over any of them, period. And they couldn't even use the documents that she used for as the manual for the mother church, for their church. They each had to have their own set of bylaws and so forth. So they did everything that was the opposite of what was in the manual. And she had trusts that outlined what they were, that they had to follow. So it took the religion, it made the religion something that would be regulated by the law of the land instead of by a religious church. And they went to court and they said, well, after she passed on, they said, well, she certainly wouldn't have meant to have this be self-expiring, but that's exactly what she meant. And so they convinced the court to give them the power, the board of directors, the power to govern all the churches and all the people. So they basically destroyed the entire movement. And instead of having 40 or 50 churches in each of the big cities throughout the world, you'll be lucky to find one or two or three. It's down probably 90-95%. And I've just explained the reasons why. Mathematics does not have any church. Chemistry doesn't have any church. Physics doesn't have a church. And Christian Science is a science. It is the highest form of science there is. Einstein said that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. And Christian Science is the only religion in the world that is both scientific and religious. The religion is Christianity, and the science is exactly what she explains. And we have all the details about exactly what is the science and the way to study this scientifically. And the thing that got Einstein so interested in Christian Science to make those statements that I mentioned was that he had a friend that was on the Atomic Energy Commission for the United States, and everybody on that commission passed on from radiation except his friend, Dr. Underwood. And he was healed through Christian Science. And when Einstein witnessed that, and he asked him, he said, how is it you're the only one that survived? He said, because I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Then Einstein, after studying it for a few years, said, when you study it and practice it systematically and scientifically, it is an effective healing system. And that's exactly what I read to you about. This has been reduced to a system, and we explain all about it. I'm very grateful for everyone that I've learned from and received inspiration from, all the Bible characters in the Old Testament, the New Testament, obviously Christ Jesus and Paul, and Mary Baker Eddy at the top of the list, because she explained the science of how Jesus healed. She discovered Christian Science. She gave us everything we need to know. She wrote 16 other books besides the textbook. Every one of them is based on the same truth. I'm grateful for the advanced students of Christian Science, such as the ones I've mentioned here, and many others that have devoted part or all of their adult life to the study and application of Christian Science, the dedicated practitioners that have been the top ones that have been successful. I will close with reading what Mary Baker Eddy titled as the Diapason of Heaven. And she wrote a different one for each of the seven terms for God. And since this treatment is about mind being the controller of everything, I will read the one about mind. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. Divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen.